Welcome to today's episode of Reflections on Logic of Inquiry. I am your host, Sarah Bostick. Today's episode is on whether or not sociology is a science. To reflect on this question, I will be discussing Linda Alcoff's 1987 article entitled Justifying Feminist Social Science. The main goals of this text are to decipher what methods are being used among feminist social scientists to choose a theory for their work that produces feminist social science, to make clear and justify what methods feminist social scientists use to choose their method, and to explain the relationship between feminism and social science. It can't just be a coincidence that feminist social scientists choose specific theories, and their work isn't feminist simply because they themselves are feminists. What mechanisms are at work that differentiates feminist social science from androcentric social sciences? Alcoff is looking to describe the epistemological and methodological decisions that are occurring that warrant our respect as feminists to this general body of research. This article is complex. For myself personally, I've thought a lot about theories, but not considered the complete mindfuck of a meta-theory of theories and why we choose them. So for this episode, my primary goal is to summarize this text for listeners. So strap in, here we go. One motivation for feminist social science is its emancipatory function. It is political, but this answer isn't good enough for Alcoff as to how specifically feminist social scientists go about theory choice. She acknowledges Evelyn Fox Keller's concern that political motivations will turn science into ideology, to which Alcoff disagrees and states that she doesn't believe that that is happening. An important side note here is that science itself is not a value-neutral practice in the first place, as Keller's concern seems to imply, but more on that later. Returning to Alcoff's focus at hand, we must approach determining the process of theory choice carefully. Alcoff writes on page 109, quote, "Our project must be consistently self-critical, even while it is externally directed. We must guard against making uncritical assumptions concerning which accounts of theory choice are plausible and coherent. While we should not want to accept a model of theory choice simply and entirely because it satisfactorily explains the existence of feminist social science, neither should we uncritically dismiss feminist social science if it cannot be accounted for by any pre-existing mainstream model of theory choice." Therefore, Keller's concern of feminist social science receding into the political domain is to presume an arbitrary limit on the potential of feminist social science for radically challenging dominant views in the sciences. End quote. And such a presumption is counterproductive for the objective at hand, namely to challenge androcentric assumptions and theories, argue for the validity or even superiority of feminist assumptions and theories, and to determine how feminist social scientists go about choosing the theories they employ within their work. So what conceptions of theory choice are available? In this text, Alcoff discusses the positivist conception, the holistic model, and the constructivist model. The popular one, to which many feminist social scientists are working against or calling into question, is the positivist conception of theory choice, in which empiricism is used to determine theory development and justification, assuming that through practice it is possible to be value neutral. Alcoff, like other feminists, scientists, and philosophers, sees the positivist conception as unacceptable. Methodological objectivity is unlikely, and Alcoff writes on page 111, quote, "There is no value-free methodology, or at least not one that human scientists can realistically employ in practice," end quote. Even the practice of determining what information is relevant carries with it a wide set of interests and values, according to Putnam. Sociologists Liz Stanley and Sue Wise go as far as to claim that feminist social science, because it transcends sexism, contains human values rather than androcentric ones. So it is therefore better science, and it involves a distinctive value position. So the feminist project for working out a model of theory choice must be approached carefully. First, it must avoid radical relativism, which totally replaces empirical evidence with political debate. And second, it must coherently justify the need for feminist consistent theories. Finally, it must evaluate feminist consistent theories in terms of their epistemic significance. Alcoff poses a potential solution in two alternative models to the positivist conception. These two models are the holistic model and the constructivist model. The holistic model sees that in any given field of study and of any statement, values and empirical content cannot be clearly differentiated from one another. Thus, one chosen theory is not necessarily hierarchically better than other theories, but can rather be understood as fitting into a coherent web of beliefs. Theories that promote similar feminist ideals will be grouped closer towards the center of the web, while others may be further away from the center. The holistic theory choice model thus involves, to various degrees of significance, the entire web. The holistic model thus claims to avoid radical or absolute relativism. On the other hand, the constructivist model similarly relies on coherence among theories, but it adds another point of emphasis, focusing on discourse and its significance for setting the background conditions necessary before a statement can even be considered. Quoting Michel Foucault, "Before a proposition can be pronounced true or false, it must be within the true," end quote. Somewhat contrasting to the holistic model that understands values and empirical content as non-distinct, the constructivist model goes further to suggest that the central features of the discourse, power and/or politics, are not distortions of the empirical, but actually construct what we perceive as truth and how we understand what is empirical. So aside from the added emphasis on discourse and the constructivist model of theory choice, what are the actual differences between the constructivist model and the holistic model? Alcoff believes the difference here is their contrasting conceptions of truth. For the holistic model, truth is determined by the correspondence between a knowledge claim and reality. This should be quite familiar, as it is similar to the conception of truth promoted by positivism and Western thought. A knower or subject makes knowledge claims about reality or what is known to be objective. If we are trying to prove that feminist social science is indeed a science, this conception of truth is quite persuasive. In the holistic model, truth is abstract and universal. It corresponds to some sense of an objective material reality. The constructivist model of theory choice has a different conception of truth. The constructivist truth is historical and contingent. What is considered truth can never be free of subjective elements. Truth is a process. Truth is something we construct rather than being something that is discovered out there, fully intact. There is no truth that is universal, abstract, or independent of the scientific process. In the words of Foucault, discourses are practices that systematically form the objects of which they speak. End quote. In other words, each society has its own regime of truth, the types of discourses it accepts, and then names as true. We decide what is true and false based on the dominant discourses of truth in our given society. Truth is a product of history and contingent in that it changes and develops based on time and place. This isn't to say that there is no reality, but it is to say that reality is in historical development, emerging out of discourses and practices. Alcoff suggests that neither the holistic model nor the constructivist model is necessarily radically relativist, but that the constructivist model does sacrifice the ability to be universalized. But both are committed to some form of relativism. For the holistic view, it is relativist in the sense that the criterion for theory choice is relative, if we think back to the existing web of belief and how different theories are relative to one another. But truth itself is not relative for the holistic model. For the constructive model, truth is relative to a dialogic process. It is something we compose in real time based upon historical constructions of truth, and truth is contingent on time and place. So where do we go from here? What model of theory choice can we use to choose a theory if the positivist model is unacceptable due to its commitment to value neutral theory choice and we are left to choose between the holistic and constructivist models? Well, I'm glad you asked because up to this point, it's been relatively unclear. So to make this decision, Alcoff first demonstrates how the holistic and constructivist models would approach the topic of understanding women's experience. The holistic model would understand the truth of women's experiences being in correspondence to an independent reality, something that we must discover. It would assume that women's experiences are an autonomous reality in which that experience takes place. The constructivist model, on the other hand, would see truth as emerging from discourses and practice, and therefore, Alcoff writes on page 120, women's experience is something that we create or learn how to create or use, rather than something we simply discover. It is in the act of conceptualizing and problematizing women as subjects from which emerges the entity called women's experience, end quote. So the holistic model sees experience as something that can be discovered, and the constructivist model sees experience as constructed through the process of inquiry. These models and application follow from contrasting conceptions of reality and truth. Unfortunately, after all of these considerations, Alcoff does not see either of these two models of theory choice as solving the problem of feminist social science. And just to restate what this problem of feminist social science is, it is the need for feminist social science to explain and justify its method of theory choice in relation to its own theories and those of androcentric social science. Alcoff does, however, identify a flaw in the initial concern and problem voiced by Evelyn Fox Keller that in part prompted her to consider for herself the problem for feminist social science in the first place. Keller warns against replacing science with ideology, but Alcoff contends that to defeat positivism, we must stop depicting scientific and political theories and practices as being wholly distinct from one another. Alcoff writes on page 122 that we need not worry about replacing science with ideology because, in an important sense, science already is ideology. End quote. Keller's articulation of the problem of feminist social science and potential for it to be devalued as a science if it allows politics or values to be included is entrenched in the presupposition of a positivist philosophy of science. To consider these questions and possible solutions in regards to theory choice, we must include talk about feminism and epistemology, and what we mean by truth. It is only when we begin seriously having these conversations that we may determine a clear alternative to positivism and correspondence theories of truth. Therefore, Alcoff's discussion of theory choice serves as a reminder for feminist social scientists that we must carefully consider not only the theories we choose in our work, but how and why. So what do you think, my lovely listeners who just survived this journey through an essential meta-theory? Is the problem of feminist social science still occurring today? In the year 2020, it's been 33 years since Linda Alcoff published this article. Are we still having to justify feminist social science against the opposition of Western positivist understandings of science? Do either the holistic or constructivist models of theory choice present themselves as viable, coherent, persuasive alternatives? I look forward to hearing your takes on this.